This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, Sports Map Radio. It is a throwback Thursday. We are going back to 1994. That was the date Tonya Harding won the U.S. Figure Skating Championship, but Nancy Kerrigan had been hit on the knee with a pipe, and she could not compete, and that led to the biggest, one of the biggest scandals in sports of that year, and still even talked about to this day. The National Championship of College Football will be on Monday, Alabama taking on Ohio State. Once again, you're going to start hearing one of my favorite times during the bowl season, and that is people figuring out in the Southeastern Conference whether they're going to root for Alabama because of the conference, or they'll just root against them because they're kind of jealous of the success of Alabama. It's one of the more perplexing things I've seen in sports where you rally around a conference that you're in. But in order to understand that sort of feeling, you got to really understand SEC football. It is more than just football played in a geographical area of the United States. There is some sort of branding that goes on with the SEC that I think is different from other sports. I don't even think the Big Ten has it as much as, you know, the Big 12 doesn't really have it. The Pac-12 doesn't really have it. There's a brand to SEC football. When the tagline is "it matters more," it seems a little presumptuous, but it is true. It is a very passionate fan base that puts a lot of emphasis on the success of the local college football team within the Southeastern Conference. Fan bases sort of bleed into other markets, but in the end, it is something that people are just extremely passionate about, even, you know, on another level than other places around the country. But it always has lent itself to sort of a dilemma, which is the more success an SEC team has, or let's be honest, any conference has, but I'm going to focus on the SEC. The more success that team has, the more likely they're going to sustain that success as kids are noticing what's working at that program compared to what's not working at other schools. If you're a Florida fan or a South Carolina fan like I am, or a Kentucky fan, watching the success of Alabama lends to more success at Alabama as long as Nick Saban's there. And that trend's going to continue even after Monday night, regardless of who wins. It is Wake Up Call. The good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up next as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, so good, the bad, and the dumb here on a throwback Thursday. Again, 1994 is our focus today. Let's get the good of the day, Ron Culver. What is it?
Bush.
Bush.
Beer.
Really? What are they doing?
You remember Bush beer?
I do. Are they still a thing?
They're still a thing.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. Well, I know they're still a thing. They have a new promotion coming out.
Oh, very good.
For their Bush Light beer, which I thought Bush beer was light, but, you know, who am I to judge? I don't drink it.
Right.
But this promotion is actually kind of fun. For every inch of snow that falls in your area, they will knock a dollar off the price of their beer. Up to $15. So I don't think they do six packs. I only think they do like the
cases.
The cases of beer.
That's pretty good.
So yeah.
So if you live in Saskatchewan, or that's in Canada, is it a US thing?
Yeah, I don't think Canada.
All right, So if you live in Minnesota, you might get this beer for practically nothing.
You could.
New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine. You can get this beer for up to
$15. So I guess a case of beer is maybe 20 bucks.
Handful of bucks.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Maybe some couch cushion change.
Yeah, get it for $5 if 15 inches of snow fall in your area, which seems like that could easily happen. Now, I wonder if they do it like in other places, like, you know, Buffalo. Sometimes every once in a while, Buffalo gets like 30 inches of snow.
Now I'm fascinated by this because how is it determined who runs that angle of the business?
Because, I mean, the amount of snow that falls in Buffalo will be considerably different from the amount of snow that falls here in Houston.
That's right. So if you have a department that's monitoring this and saying, people in Buffalo, we've noticed through the weather app that you've had this much snow, so you're selling this for this amount, and Miami, you got zero snow, so yeah. you don't get this discount at all. So you have to sell it at the full retail price.
Do you cross state lines or county lines?
Right. Like, do you drive to Syracuse to get like very low priced Busch Light?
Yeah.
You might spend more in gas, but yeah, for your party in Birmingham.
But is it just one, or can you buy several?
Yeah. Exactly. Can you show up in a U-Haul truck and just load up on Busch Light in upstate New York?
Kind of a
to drive it back to Charlotte.
So what'd you describe? Kind of a reverse Seinfeld.
Yeah. Right. Episode? Exactly. Yeah. 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 That's right.
Instead
that's right.
When
they did the
Michigan?
Aluminum cans. Yeah.
The 5 cent
return, 10 cent return. That's right. That's right. Yeah, this is kind of fascinating.
But you know, it's a fun promotion. I mean,
that's right.
You know what else is Busch Light known for besides Busch?
Now, if you like Busch Light real a lot, and could you imagine if you showed up at like some gas station in upstate New York or someplace like that and went, "I'll take every single case you have and just throw down some."
It's got to be a limit, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there's a limit on toilet paper, the amount of toilet paper you can buy right now. So there's got to be a limit on the amount of cases.
That's right. Maybe up to 2 cases a person or something. That's good. Well, it's a good promotion.
Yeah, all right. It's different.
So what's the bad of the day?
All right, I'm going to need your help with this.
All right.
Because I'm diving into the world of F1.
Yeah, okay.
All right. And the bad of the day is that there's no one who had a worse ending to 2020 than F1 driver Daniil Kvyat.
Daniel Kvyat.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Now I got to go back in history a little bit, right? We got to go back to 2015 when he first lost his seat to Max Verstappen.
Max Verstappen, who was the son of Josh Verstappen. So he came from racing royalty.
Yeah, and Max lit the world on fire, correct?
Yes, he's a fantastically he came in third in the standings, and he's won a couple of races. So he's very good. He's won 10 races. He's only like 22, 23.
Right. Well, Daniel fought his way back. Like, he wasn't even part of the racing team anymore. So you probably know off the top of your head. But yep. I can't think of it. Rosso?
Rosso. He's on the B team of Red Bull Racing. So they have an A team, which drives the really cool Red Bull looking car, and then they drive another. There's a B team, and he drives for that.
But during that time, as he was clawing his way back to making the A team again, being one of the main drivers, he met a woman.
He did,
and it was a Brazilian model. Her name is I can't remember. I had it here, but Kelly Piquet. Right? She's a Brazilian model, Kelly Piquet. They had a daughter together. Now, Kelly Piquet is the former three-time world champion, the daughter of Nelson Piquet.
Yep, Nelson Piquet,
Who I'm assuming is a legend in the sport.
He's another fantastic driver in the history of the sport.
Yeah, is he kind of like a Mario Andretti type?
No, he's not on that level.
He's not on that level, but he's
he's a good driver. He's a good driver. Yeah.
So that happened, and they have a daughter together. Right, so everything's looking good. This is how his 2020 ended. He lost his seat, so he's out of a job again. And his Brazilian girlfriend, who he had broken up with already, is now dating Max Verstappen.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's an amazing, fun little story, but not for Daniel Kvyat.
No.
That you would lose your job to Max Verstappen, and then a few years later, lose your hot Brazilian model girlfriend to Max
who
Verstappen.
Who you have a daughter with, your baby
Who
mama.
You have a daughter with, who you have to have a relationship with. It's not like you can close the door and just find somebody else and never see that person again.
Nope.
You sort of have to have a relationship with that individual. You got to go to the house. You got to talk to her about how she's being raised and all that. Mm-hmm. But Max Verstappen, the guy that took your job, is hanging around.
Is also now shacking up with your girl.
That's right. That's right. So you're trying to figure out your love life and your racing career, and there's one gentleman that has affected you both. Affected both.
Yeah. I mean, are they even friends?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, if they ever were to race with each other again, would they just come to blow? Would he try to run him off the road? Would he throw a helmet at the car as the car is speeding by?
I would every now and then. Why not? Plus, it's got to be tough too because Max Verstappen is a guy that is one of the young guns. Like, he calls his own shot. He's reached that point in his career. We see it in other sports where you're so good, you can do whatever you want, right? You're not going to lose your job. Somebody's going to pick you up if you lose your ride. Like, he's that good. He's like the Jeff Gordon of Formula One. He's like a young, everybody wants a piece of him. So you can't touch that. Like, if you're like him.
Greg, remember, He's touted to be the face of F1 in a few years, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. As soon as he gets into another car, he'll win championships. So as soon as he gets out of Red Bull and goes to Mercedes, he'll be winning titles like Lewis Hamilton. But it's just, imagine if you lost your job and your girl to the same guy.
Exactly.
Like, it's just,
that's how 2020 wrapped up for you.
Like, Bob in accounting, thanks for all your service, but Jim here is not only going to be taking over the role at this company, but I hear your ex-wife is dating him too. Like, I don't know. Is that working for you?
You know,
like,
what it is? You know what it is? I mean, it was fantasy, but now it's fantasy in real life. It literally is the Ricky Bobby movie.
Right. Yeah. That's funny. That's a great point. Yeah. That's right. I'm trying to remember if we've had something like that in other sports where we're not really losing your job, but like your teammate is dating. Wasn't that a couple of basketball players that were dating the same gal?
Kardashians.
Kardashians. Wasn't one of the Spice Girls dating like Jason Kidd and Steve Nash at the same time?
I don't know, but I don't think it's ever to this level.
No, not on the level where a guy gets your girl and the job and your job too.
And might be your daughter's stepfather.
Yeah.
You don't know. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if it was just, you know, they had a relationship and they dissolved, hey, you know what? You move on.
Right.
We've had a lot of those. But the fact is that you got to still go over to the house and pick up your daughter for your weekends.
But in Formula One, more so than in other race car sports, the car matters so much because there's money tied to it and you make better machines. So he was racing a car that had no chance of winning races, like none. He did not have the power. He did not have the ingenuity. He did not have the technology. And Max is driving a car he used to drive that is capable of winning races. Right. So every weekend, he's on the pole or he's near the pole. He's in the front, he's on the podium, like, and he's just looking up going, I couldn't, if I wanted to compete on the court, on the track, and now I can't compete in social life either.
Yeah. when Max passes him, he goes, that's my car.
Man, and he's got my girl.
That's my girl.
God. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, I'm gonna stick over in Europe. It's a Cameroonian striker being a soccer term, Tony.
Yes, he is on the front line, right?
Right.
Right.
Didier Lemichael Zay.
Nice.
Right. He plays for a team, I think he plays for Antwerp in the Belgian league. Anyways, Didier desperately wants to be traded to this Greek team, Panathinaikos.
Is that a good team? Is that a good place to land?
It's a good team, but the reason why he wants to be traded there is because he wants to be with his former manager.
Oh, that seems reasonable.
Right. So he's trying to force a trade. Now, I'm going to put it to you here in the United States. When our players here try to force a trade, they probably sit out or they take to social media or I don't know.
There's a couple of avenues to force the hand of the powers that be.
Could this become a new trend? Because what Didier did was wear the jersey of his current team's rival.
Oh, no.
To show up to the training center.
Okay. I don't think we...
Basically, I'll put it to you in this context, right? Aaron Judge wants to get traded to the Red Sox. Yankees aren't moving because they know what they have in Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge shows up to spring training in a Red Sox jersey.
That's amazing.
That's what it would be like.
That's amazing. Man, that's going to take a level of confidence that I just don't think I will ever possess.
Now, like, they didn't let him into the building.
Yeah, obviously. Right?
And I don't know what the outcome is. You know, maybe they will start filling out a way to trade. But, I mean, trades in soccer are a lot different, especially when you go from one country to another.
Unbelievable.
Because it's not like here where it's like, oh, does the money make sense? Like, no, you got to pay the rights to even try to sign the player.
That's crazy. You know what? That might influence it. I know some NFL guys that could probably do that in a heartbeat. Like, I really hate playing here. I'm wearing the rival jersey to get me out of here.
Like Le'Veon Bell, when he was doing his whole shtick, right? Or Antonio Brown, when he went off the deep end.
Right.
Wouldn't that be like him showing up to Steelers camp or to Heinz Field in a Browns jersey
or
Ravens jersey?
Exactly. Exactly.
Just like, yeah. I mean, that's not the team he wants to get traded to. It's just, I'm done supporting you guys. I'm now going to do everything I can to almost be a cancer in your
Well, and you know, like I said, sometimes in sports we see things trickle down. Maybe this has. Maybe we'll start seeing this a little more. Like, maybe. Hey, damn. You know,
maybe Aaron Judge once word will show up one day in a Red Sox jersey. Yeah, like, guys, I just want to get out.
All right, Brett Hudson of the Tuscaloosa News is going to join us in a couple minutes. We'll talk Alabama. We'll preview them, and then we're trying to preview Ohio State tomorrow to give you a feel for Monday's championship game. That is coming up. We'll continue with Sports Map Radio.
On Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install those wiper blades free of charge. See better and drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Brett Hudson will join us from Tuscaloosa News coming up in 12 minutes. We'll talk to him about Alabama and their chances of winning yet another national championship. I think it's 6 under Nick Saban that they're going for, 18 overall. Was that Blind Melon? Is that really 894? My God.
Yeah.
Is that the Bumblebee video?
That's the Bumblebee video.
Nice. Nice. God, that's, oh my God. That's really dating me.
Yeah, that one hurts a little bit, right?
Yeah, that does, because I would have, if I would were to have guessed, I probably would have said late 90s. But 94. 94 Throwback Thursday, Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan. Kerrigan yesterday got hit, and today is the anniversary of Tanya Harding winning without Kerrigan in the field and going to the Olympics in Lillehammer.
But her plan didn't work because Kerrigan still got the pass because the other skaters like, yeah, Kerrigan should go.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and Kerrigan made the most of it. She won a silver medal, and we celebrated her, put her on Saturday Night Live. Took her to Disney World. She did all those things.
She lost. She lost to Oksana Baiul.
Oksana Baiul. Yeah, exactly. She got drunk. Michael pointed that out on Twitter. She had a DUI.
Who? Kerrigan?
Oksana Baiul.
Oksana Baiul.
Yeah, I think it was in Connecticut at the time. So, yeah. So that goes 1994. So I went to go to the doctor's yesterday because I went to get my eyes exam. I don't know, like a month ago. And my eye doctor, who I know really well. So when he tells me stuff, I kind of, you know, we have a good relationship. He said, hey, your eyes are drooping. Like your eyelids are drooping. And I go, really? He goes, yeah, I've been noticing it a few times that you come in. It's getting, you know, eventually it's going to fall over your pupil. It's going to block your vision. You might want to get that looked at. I can recommend a doctor that can do a simple day surgery that will lift your lids, if you will. Well, it doesn't bother me, so I never really thought I would need it. Like, it's not something like, man, that hurts. I would love to relieve the pain. It just was like, sounded more cosmetic to me. So my wife finally made an appointment. We went yesterday morning, and I go in, and they do that. I don't know if you've ever had a periphery test where you put your head in a thing. So you put your head, you usually have one eye blocked, and you do this thing where you're gonna see this dot. And you focus on the dot, and then other dots are going to be lit up around that dot. And if you see it, you press the click. And it's a test to see how your peripheral vision is. I failed miserably. Miserably. I was in the not only the poor range, but the very poor range. So she gave me some relaxing drops for my eyelids and then pulled them up. I couldn't believe it. It was a wake up call. I mean, no pun intended for this show. I couldn't believe how well I could see. It was like, oh, that's what blue is. Oh, no, seriously. Like I could see around me. I mean, it was like getting an extra level of vision. It was great. It was like Superman. It was incredible. So I'm going to have this procedure done in a couple weeks or a couple months, whenever they can schedule me in. It's like, you know, when you're, when people don't know they need glasses and then they get glasses and they're like, oh, so this is how we're supposed to see now? Oh, wow. I've been missing out on this whole time. That's what I felt like. So even at my age, I'm getting some medical surprises, which make me feel good. I now can fix this. Now I can't stop thinking that I have the problem. See, before, if I had left it alone, I would have been like, what's the big deal? I don't seem to have this issue. But now that I've, you know, she opened my eyes up, I'm like, oh, wait, I want that. So, but you know what she said one of the drawbacks of the surgery is? My eyes are going to be black and blue for like 2 weeks.
Well, you got to come up with a good story then. Maybe you wrestled a bear.
I know. Well, what do I do? Because are people just going to assume my wife hit me with a frying pan? Like, no matter what I say, I'm going to be like, yeah, I had lift surgery on my eye. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, whatever.
I would go with.
Did you forget to take out the trash or something?
No, I was, you know, just honestly, people ask you about like, hey, what happened? I got Tonya Harding.
Yeah, that's true. I could do that.
Lead pipe. Because,
or I lost a fight. I don't want to say that. Looks like you got your butt kicked by somebody. What happened?
You got bears in Tennessee, right?
Yeah, I could say that.
I would say wrestle a bear.
Say wrestled a bear in the backyard.
Or you can say, you know, hey, the wife likes it rough.
That's true. I could go down that angle. It's crazy. I don't know. Look, if I'm hurting, like if I got pain and my wife says, we're going to the doctor, I usually go, great. Maybe I get an answer to this. I could not begin to tell you how much I did not want to go to that appointment yesterday. I was like, I don't need this.
I would want
cosmetic. I don't want this.
Well, not only that, I don't know if I could handle people poking around my eyes.
Yeah, it hurt a little bit. She had to put tape on I'm telling you, I don't care how old the person is. If you put tape on any part of somebody's body, be aware that you can't just go, all right, we're done, rip. Just slow down a little bit before you just take the tape and rip it off my skin, right? I know it's the best way. I know. I get it. I've had Band-Aids where it's just better to just rip it off as quickly as possible. But it still doesn't hurt less when she goes, and okay, now we're done. I wanted to scream. Because I'm kind of wimpy like that. So anyway, I don't know.
On your eyes, I would have felt like they were ripping off my eyelids.
Yeah, it really was.
Because it was taped to your eyelids, right?
Yeah, it was. She taped my eyelids back.
What about your eyelashes? Were they caught in there?
No, she didn't. Oh, God.
How big is the piece of tape, by the way?
It's big, but it's wide. So they did it on just below my eyebrow across the way. So just across.
Thinking about
just,
it right now.
Yeah. Just attached to the eyelid, just below the eyebrow, and then ripped across. That's what I felt like. No, it was terrible.
That does not sound fun at all.
Yeah, so then she said, oh, in the surgery, she goes, the surgery is either going to be two things. One, either we're going to give you an anesthesia, it'll just knock you out, and you won't remember anything. Or two, which is likely in your case, we're going to give you some drugs to sort of make you relaxed. You won't feel anything, but you'll be awake through the process.
I'm like, no,
we're not doing the, you're not messing with my eyes, and I'm going to be awake through the process. I've seen too much Hostel. I'm not doing that. All right. Like we are going to knock Tony out and then we're going to wake us up when we're done. And that's what I want. And then send me home with ice cream. That's what I want. Okay. I'm not doing this unless I get that. No. We're not doing this where I can't feel anything, but I can see you doing stuff.
Yeah. No.
No, we're not doing that. You got to be out of your mind.
That's an easy
come
answer,
on.
Right?
And she said it so casually as if that was an option like that I would take.
Yes.
Like, oh, I would be able to see you make the incision and all that. Oh, yeah. No, I'd love that. In fact, why don't you sign me up for that right now? We don't even have to discuss
it. Here's the thing. Are they putting your head in like a full brace? Because if I see anyone coming at me with a knife.
Oh, no question.
You're flinching, right?
And she should have just said, and by the way, you wouldn't be able to scream. So just letting you know, you'll just be there tied down. You won't be able to scream, and you'll watch everything I'm able to do to you.
Yeah. You're right. I've seen
that
movie.
Nuts? Yeah, exactly. It's like, what are you, nuts? Like, that doesn't end well at all. No, it doesn't.
You know, break my hand while you're at it.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't you take a ball-peen hammer and go crush my knee while I'm sitting here?
Well, I'm sitting there.
Got to be kidding me. Why don't you pour wax, you know, like down my throat or something?
What do you want to know?
I've seen too many horror movies for that to be an option. All right, Brett Hudson's going to join us next. We'll talk Alabama football. They get ready for Ohio State. And man, just another trophy in the case for Nick Saban if he pulls it off down in Miami. That's next. Sports Map Radio.
Good pull, the nasty tricks you pull. Seems like we're making up more than we're making love.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is a Throwback Thursday. 1994 is when we go back. So we go back for the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan situation. But Alabama and Ohio State Monday night in Miami, the national championship game. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Brett Hudson joins us from the Tuscaloosa News to talk about the Alabama side of the national title game. How are you, Brett?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. All right. So let's start off, before we get into some of the details of the game, let's start off with this season as a whole. This explosion offensively, this trio of Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, we knew they would be there. Did you expect an offense like we've seen this year, averaging nearly 50 points a game?
I don't think anyone expected this, no, because when you go back to the offseason, Alabama had its quarterback, two wide receivers, and an offensive lineman drafted in the first round. They lost others due to eligibility or transfer. So you don't anticipate an offense like this after that kind of attrition. And frankly, the roster projection kind of lended itself to more of a ground-based run-forward attack when you're returning four of your five offensive line starters and basically all of your ball carriers from the season prior. You would expect them to be kind of a run-first or at least more run-centric style of offense, even if they don't go full-on joyless murder ball, as it's called in these parts. But they didn't do that. They realized the talent they have with Devontae Smith and their tight end group and some of the wide receivers behind them. They correctly evaluated that Mac Jones is an elite thrower of the deep ball, and he can make defenses pay consistently that way. So they went full speed ahead, and the results are pretty obvious, are they not?
All through the regular season, no one has been able to keep up with Alabama, but they did get pushed by Florida in the SEC title game. Is there anything to dissect from that game that Ohio State could replicate in Miami on Monday?
That and other games in Alabama's season, they've struggled with, I guess the right word would be atypical passing concepts. Like tight ends have given Alabama trouble all year long. And Ohio State has one, Jeremy Ruckert, who has 12 catches on the year, five of them for touchdowns. He had three catches in the semifinal against Clemson, two of them for touchdowns. So that's something to monitor when you use a more complex pass scheme to get secondary receiving threats. The football, Alabama's shown a vulnerability to that. They've also shown vulnerability to running backs out of the backfield, but that's not something that Ohio State does a lot of. So if Ohio State is able to establish its run game, especially with Justin Fields being a part of that, if his ribs can handle that kind of contact and open themselves up to some of the more complex play-action pass schemes in their arsenal, that would probably lead to a degree of offensive success that could be enough to win the game.
We've seen the coaching staff or Nick Saban take a shuffle during these times. Kirby Smart. We also saw Lane Kiffin. With Steve Sarkisian trying to do double duty, how has that worked so far? And give us a little insight on what his process has been as trying to get this team ready for the game down in Miami.
It's going well because Steve Sarkisian and Nick Saban are shockingly similar. You know, they view the world and football in a lot of the same ways. They're pretty similar people, which is not something I necessarily expected when this experiment kicked off. So really, as you mentioned, Alabama's been in this situation several times before, and it all comes down to the person involved. They've seen the good and bad. The bad, obviously, the Lane Kiffin debacle, and then the championship game, I think it was the 2018 season in California, where they got run off the field by Clemson. They had several assistants on that team that were on their way out and clearly had their minds somewhere other than that national championship game. But they've also been on the good side of it. Jim McElwain, Kirby Smart, and Jeremy Pruitt all won national championship games before they took the head coaching job at Colorado State, Georgia, and Tennessee, respectively. So Bama's been in this situation now six times, And it's all entirely dependent on the person in the situation. And there's a lot of faith in Steve Sarkisian to handle it the way that Alabama would prefer it be handled, because he and Saban are of similar cloth. I hesitate to say that too many times, because it might place unfair expectations on him for his tenure at Texas, although I guess Longhorn faithful are probably going to do that whether I say anything about it or not.
Let me ask you this, Brett, and for your opinion on this issue, because I guess the coaches will just toe the line of cliches, but is there a rest factor or a lack of wear and tear factor that you think could be prevalent in this game with the difference of games played between these two opponents?
I guess it's possible, but Alabama's been pretty fortunate, you know, on the injury front, that is. They've had some minor injuries that have kept guys out for a game or two, but most of those things are more or less gone now. The one exception is Malachi Moore, a defensive back who starts as kind of their nickel corner guy. He missed the semifinal. He may be out for the national championship game. It depends on how well he heals in the 10 days in between the games. But for the most part, like Waddle and his ankle injury, and then a defensive lineman, LeBrian Ray, has been out for most of the season. But Bama's been somewhat fortunate in the health department, so I don't know that they're coming into this game significantly more beat up than Ohio State is, especially since Ohio State is far from at full capacity with COVID-19 issues. If anything, I would say there's actually some benefit for Alabama on the opposite side, because go back to the spring, there was no spring practice. There was different, limited, strange summer workouts, whatever term you prefer. And since then, Alabama started its preseason in late August, early September. They've played, 12 games now?
Yeah.
Whereas Ohio State didn't start practicing in earnest until early to mid-September, and they've only played 7. So there are a lot of reps in there that Bama has that Ohio State couldn't even dream of having. So if Alabama were beat up in a bunch of different ways and they were questionable with 3 or 4 starters due to injury, then yeah, I think there's a pretty strong case to be made for that. But Bama's been somewhat fortunate, and I think there's a case to be made that Bama is closer to the best version of itself just because of all the reps it's gotten that Ohio State has not.
Brett Hudson joining us, Tuscaloosa News on a Progressive guest line, talking Alabama as they get ready for Ohio State on Monday in Miami for the national championship. Brett, a little insight on Mac Jones, and if you followed, if anybody's followed Alabama from maybe the outside and have seen, sort of a field general in A.J. McCarron and the dynamic play of a Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, some quarterbacks that have been in the program, what is Mac Jones? What kind of attributes does he have as a quarterback?
Well, first of all, elite deep ball accuracy. He is unbelievable in that regard. I might even argue he's better than Tua accuracy-wise, maybe 25 or more yards down the field. He's truly elite in that regard. He's not the complete package that Tua is yet. Tua was a little more mobile. He's a little more prolific in the RPO game, especially in the short and intermediate ranges. But this is an offense that thrives on forcing defenses to defend all portions of the field when it passes, on having someone who throws the ball as well as Mac Jones does, 25 yards or more down the field, is an invaluable asset in all of that. And Mac Jones really understands this offense. He's a very intelligent person, and he's been able to take things that have come over the course of the season. Like 2 games against Arkansas and Notre Dame, those were 2 teams that kind of sagged into deep, passive zones and more or less took away that deep ball. They said, we're not going to get beat by that, and they're forcing Alabama to work the short and intermediate games, take the dump down, take the check off. And Mac Jones was perfectly willing to do that. He understands all of the intricacies of this offense. He understands managing it within the course of the game and relative to how the opposing defense is playing it. So I think those 2 things are what makes Mac stand out, and also what makes him an excellent fit for this year's offense, are the elite deep ball accuracy and his just overall intelligence and management of the offense.
Is this game, does it feel like it's going to be a sort of, not maybe shootout per se, that might be too strong, but more of an offensive dominated game with Trey Sherman, Justin Fields, and Alabama's weapons? does it feel like it's going to be more known for that, or could it be a defensive battle?
No, go ahead and call it a shootout. I'm here for that.
Oh, I mean, go ahead. Sure. Okay.
I'm getting on a plane for 2 or 3 hours, dude. I better see some points down there.
That's right.
These are two teams that are uber talented everywhere because they recruited the top of the sport. They are almost exclusive in doing that for at least the last 6 or 7 years. But they're also more offensive leaning in nature this year. They just have the electric playmakers there that both teams don't have as many of on the defensive side for different reasons at both schools. So I think these are two teams that are more offensive leaning in nature going against defenses that aren't nationally elite by any standard, maybe even not even above average in some. So I do anticipate points. If you look at the gambling lines, most of them fall in the over-under of the 75 to 77 range, with Alabama as a 7 or 8 point favorite. So you're looking at roughly a projected final score of 42 to 34 in favor of the Tide. And that seems about right to me, just based on the roster makeup of these two teams.
One final thought, Brett, before we let you go and catch that plane down to Miami. In terms of Saban and his coaching and the way COVID has affected teams, was there a difference in his approach to what he demanded of his players and what he could get from his players rather than what he couldn't do to the virus? Was there a different way he approached this team than any other team in history because of what he had to deal with from a pandemic sense?
What do you mean, like how they approached the pandemic?
Right. Like without the meetings and without sort of the things that you can ask a player to do pre-COVID that you couldn't ask a player to do post-COVID.
Yeah, honestly, and he's been effusive of his praise in this as well. I think a lot of it comes down to the players. You know, coaches always preach that the best teams are player-led, and they're right, but it's hard to manufacture that within your program, but this team absolutely was. And I think you've seen him cozy up to this team in a way that he doesn't with most of his teams. He was effusive in his praise of this team after the SEC championship game, kind of more or less saying that this was his favorite SEC championship game win because of this team, everything that it's had to endure and go through over the course of the season. So Saban has been very outright in passing on much of the praise and credit to the leadership core of this team, and I think he's right in doing so, and I think he deserves that because they can put in all the contact tracing measures, they can change everything in their program to make them as not liable to COVID or its spread as they possibly can. But ultimately, they can't stop the kids from going to parties and bars if they want to, if they really, really want to. And Alabama's players have been able to maintain their bubble and maintain their focus and understand the task at hand and realize it's not going to be fun sometimes. It's going to be difficult personally, but they've been able to do it. They've only had a few minor instances where COVID has come calling for them, and they've been able to navigate those pretty well. So, I mean, it's natural that all of the credit at Alabama goes to Nick Saban, but I think he has been pretty outright in passing that on to the players when it comes to managing some of the pandemic threats, and I think they earned it.
Brett, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Have a safe trip down to Miami. Enjoy the game and appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. That is Brett Hudson, Tuscaloosa News. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. Thoughts on the national championship game when we come back. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wednesday, January 13th, it's the American Heart Association's 35th annual Paul Bear Bryant Awards. This year's ceremony goes virtual and will feature appearances from Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, and more. For more info and to find out how you can participate, visit bryantawards.org.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, this hour, Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life. Rocket Can, 1994, and a Throwback Thursday. How fun has this been today with this music? It's a little Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah.
Meatloaf is great. This was Bad Out of Hell 2.
Yes.
Wasn't it? So... Paradise by the Dashboard Lights might be the greatest relationship song in the history of music. Is that not a bold statement?
Yes.
It's unbelievable how that song ends. Basically like praying for the end of time so I can end my time with you. What a line. That's Meatloaf. What a man.
I mean,
just seriously.
Celebrated artist, right? We can say that.
You can say that. Yeah, Meatloaf. Oh, goodness. All right, national title game Monday. Look, what would prevent us from thinking that Alabama just rolls through this team, right?
There's nothing.
There's nothing, except Ohio State looked amazing against Clemson. I have seen teams go into a game prepared. I've seen way too many games where a team is prepared. Ohio State was as prepared for Clemson as I've seen any team. Maybe not more, maybe a little less, but right there near the top of teams, knowing exactly what was coming. Now, sometimes you get a little too narrow focused where you that becomes your quote-unquote Super Bowl, and then you kind of keep your eyes on the prize is just a little off. I don't know if that happens to this Buckeye team. But Alabama, with the three guys they have on offense, defensively, like Brett said, they lost some guys. Maybe they're not as Alabama tough defensively as they used to be. That is a machine that is working smooth. I still think this game is not a blowout. I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's going to be an uncomfortable win for Alabama by like one score. But I do think Alabama wins the national title. Jake Asman Show coming up next.